All right, so today we're going to be doing Yud Amud Aleph, but of course, we're going to begin on Tet Amud Bet, the last line. The context of Bam, we've been talking a bunch of shtaros, how exactly they work, how they date them. We're going to have more of that today, but we're going to end on a nice little interesting anecdote about Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi and his relationship with Antoninus. So let's get cracking. So last line of Tet Amud Bet, Gemara says, Ahushtara, the Havaksiv Be, Shis Shana Nisei Rasa. So all of a sudden there was a document. Apparently the fancy word is it's a promissory note or some sort of contract that was written, but it was, let's say so today is, 2019. So it was written, said 2019, the loan takes effect, it says 2025, the loan's, due back. So that sounds weird that they're having a shtar that's post-dated such a long period of time. So the Gemara says that So the Rabbanon felt that, and they said in front of their colleague Rav Nachman, that this shtar is a post-dated shtar. Now, what's the relevance of that? So Rashi explains to us that the lender has done a favor for the lendee, because what he's basically saying is that typically when you take a loan from someone, so the court or legal system imposes a lien upon your property so that you have to then therefore pay back the loan. And therefore, if you default, so then we go to your properties in order to recoup and repay the loan. So what you basically have done is that by post-dating the shtar, you have done a tremendous favor to the lendee, the person who took the loan, because now the chalos, the beginning of the lien on your property, doesn't begin for another 6 years. And therefore, what would happen is, let's say in the interim period, you sold that property or one of your properties to somebody else, then the lender would not be able to recoup his money, his loan from those properties because they were sold without any lien on them. So the Gemara says, therefore, what do we do? Na'akve, so Bezin should hold on to the shtar, ad matizmani voltarif, and to make sure that the lender does not enforce payment of the loan until the actual date, until 2025. So then Rav Nachman responds, Rav Nachman, hai safra dukana kasve. This is actually a very precise scribe. So therefore, so if he's a very prescribed scribe, why is he writing a post-dated shtar? The answer is, it's not a post-dated shtar. Why is it not a post-dated shtar? This is v'hanach sheshonin d'malko be'elam. The anan lo chashvinin lehu, hu kachashiv le. He says, as we mentioned before, the secular society, the way that they dated their shtaros was from the time of the ascent of the Greek Empire. So apparently there were two different dates and when there was the beginnings and the flourishing of the Greek Empire. One happened at a certain point. And the other one happened, I think it was 400 BCE, but in 406 BCE was the initial ascension of the Greek Empire when they took over a place called Elam. And so apparently the question is, when do exactly you start it? So we don't count that. We start from, let's say, the year 400, but the scribe obviously was very aware of what was going on and therefore counted from that time. Ubizmane kosme. And so he was writing according to that time period. So therefore, what Rav Nachman is saying is that it's not just based on this factor that happens to be that there's these two different dates in which you could possibly choose from. And he's choosing is also a question of the thought process of the lender, right? Is it really likely that the lender would go ahead and tie their hands up, so to speak, from collecting their loan for 6 years? Or if there's another option, which is that we could say that even though we don't currently, and most people don't use this dating process, they go after the year, let's say 400, and not the year 406, but because of this competing consideration that, come on, this is a bit odd that you would post-date a shtar, so therefore because we have another option of re-understanding, of reconfiguring what his intention was, of Nachman saying he disagrees with his colleagues, that's not a post-dated shtar. And what's his proof that this is such a calculation, such a dating process? That Tanya, that for 6 years the Greeks ruled in Elam, then he took over the entire world. So the Gemara is going to continue with this question of whether it's true that this type of shtar is post-dated or not. So Maskif La Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. So Rav Yaakov has a final question. Mimai, what is compelling you to say that such a shtar was not post-dated? Rather, they were using the dates of the time that they took over in Elam. The Malchus Yilvanim, the Minyanim, and Dilma, the Tiesus Ram Minyanim. Meaning, how is it really the case that you think they're actually using the time period of the Greeks, maybe this shtar was being used not according to when the Greek Empire took over, rather from a time period of Yetziat Mitzrayim. What is that talking about? So if you look in, let's just read the rest of the line. We'll explain what's going on. V'shavkei la'alfa kama, v'nakhi la'alfa basra. That the instead of using the date of, let's say, because again, Yetziat Mitzrayim definitely happened hundreds of years before the advent of the Greek Empire, but instead of using the saying the word the year 1900 or let's say or 2019, they dropped the two the thousands column and only left the hundreds and tens column. So you might be thinking like that's a bit odd. Where do we do that? So we say we do that in our own Hebrew calendar, right? Meaning when we read the calendar, the date of Tavshin Ayin Tet. Right, so Tavshin Ayin Tet doesn't come out to 5,779, right? We assume we drop the thousands column and only tell you the date of the hundreds and the tens. So why would that be? Why would that be any connection to Yetziat Mitzrayim? Yeah, right. It's like, what do you mean? 5,779 Tavshin Ayin Tet is not. It's 779. It's not 5,000. So we the thousands column is never in. So what would that? So why would you think that anything to do with Egypt? And how would that solve our issue? So the Gemara says, if you look here in Rashi, Devar Maskel, Veshavka La'alfa Kama, you gotta keep your, you know, you keep yourself sharp with all these calculations here. So Rashi says, the Mitzias Mitzrayim u'mitchalinan, the Miminyani Mitzias Alpha Basra, Vehi Shana Rishona, the Yavan Shapashta Machusa M'chol Olam. So he says that if it actually works out that our calendar date, he's going to explain. Mitzias Mitzrayim v'ad Chorban Elaf Vishin Peshanim. From Yetziat Mitzrayim to the Chorban Beis Hamikdash of number 2 is 1,380 years. Tef Peshanim ad Bin Beis Harishon. Right, from Yetziat Mitzrayim to the first Beis Hamikdash is 480 years. V'taf Yud Binyano. So 480 plus 410 is 890. Right, 890. Hare. 390 plus 410 is. No, it was
390
plus 40. No, 380. Sorry, 40 plus 410 is 890. There we go. Right, 890. Okay, fine. The Binyano Hari Tuf. It says right there. Tuf Sari. 890. The Shivim the Galus Bavel. So now we're at 890 plus 70. 960. The Tuf Kuf the Bais Shani. So now 960 plus 420.
Definitely 960.
Yeah, 1380. Hari Aleph, this says right there. Hari Aleph, Vishun Peshanim. Umachas Yavan, Nami Pasha Becholam, Gimel Meas Shmonim Shanim, Kol Machorban. So we know that Malchus Yavan took, ascended to the be a global superpower 380 years before the Churban. So now, 380 minus 1,000, you get rid of it, it's the same amount of time, because from the time of Yetziat Mitzrayim to the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash is 1,380 years. If you drop the thousands column, like we do with the Hebrew calendar, so you get the same amount of time. So how do you know, so therefore, the Gemara is trying to say is that how do you know the assumption of your question to say that it is not a get mu'uchar, sorry, it's not a shtar mu'uchar, it's not a post-dated document, is that you're assuming that we are actually dated from the time period of the Greeks, but maybe the way they use their calendars is from the time Yetziat Mitzrayim. Yetziat Mitzrayim happened 1,380 years ago. Yeah, don't ask that question because as many as the convention, we drop the thousands column and only have the hundreds, and so 380, just because it says 380 on it, doesn't mean it's from the Greeks. It could be it's from Yetziat Mitzrayim. Now, if that's the case, if the time, the event from which we date our calendar is from Yetziat Mitzrayim, so then this would be a shtar muchar, because instead of being 380, well, exactly, it would be 386. So in this example, or in this case, we'd not go the other way. So 380 would be 374. So the Gemara says, oh, so you assume that maybe it's from the time of Yetziat Mitzrayim and not the Greeks. V'ha me'ucharhu. So Rav Nachman, b'gola im monen el malchi yivanim bilvad. So Rav Nachman said that, no, but that may be true in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, the convention is to date it from the time of Yetziat Mitzrayim, but in Chutz La'aretz, the convention is to date it from the time of the ascent of the Greek Empire. So the first, so Rav Acha thought, you know what? Husavar d'chuya kam mitchile nafik dak v'ashkach. So he thought at first, he was just pushing him off, like, oh yeah, like, that's a good question, but here outside the Chutz La'aretz in Bavel, we use the Greek convention. So then he said, he went out, but Ashka, he found that Tanya, actually there's a braisa that supports this. Begola ein monin el lamalchi yivanim bilvad. There's an actual explicit braisa that says we only count in the Chutz La'aretz by using the Greek convention. So now, Says Ravino, I also have a proof from a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah that proves the fact that we use the Greeks as our convention of our dates and not from Yitzhak Mitzrayim. What Mishnah? The Mishnah says, Be'echab in Nisan, Rosh Hashanah, Malachim, L'Regalim. It says the first of Nisan represents the Rosh Hashanah for kings and for festivals. So Gemara then says, Varmina, L'Malachim, L'Mai Hilchasa. For what halachic difference is there when it comes to the kings? So Amr Chizda, the Shtaros. Chizda says, you need to know this, what it is for when we did our shtaros, we did our documents. And the next Mishnah says, continues, B'tanam, Be'echab in Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah, L'Shamim, L'Shmitin. That Rosh Hashanah of Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah for years and for Shemitah. And then the Gemara continues, says, Vamrinan, the Shalom Ayhilkasa. What are you coming to tell me about Shanim? Shemitah, I understand, but what's Shanim? Well, then again, the Gemara says, the Amr of Papa, the Shtaros, it's for Shtaros. So understand, is Shtaros based on the first of Tishrei, or is Shtaros based on the first of Nisan? Kashya Shtaros Ahadadi. We seem to have a contradiction between this Mishnah. So the Gemara answers, Mashaninan, Kan Lamach Yisrael, Kan Lamach Yavod Kochavim. The answer is, we're talking about two different conventions. When you're using the Malchus Yisrael, the Israelite Jewish kingship, as your dating system, then you start with the first of Nisan, because that's when, you know, we went out of Mitzrayim, that's when Pesach is, and for Malchei of the Kochavim, we use the first of Tishrei. And the Gemara then continues, Va'anan, Hashem, Mitishrei, Minyanan. So, and we, where do we start from? Our calendars? We start from our Shtaros from Tishrei. So there you see, So if you think that really we're counting from not the Greek convention, but rather from the Exodus from Egypt, and therefore it's not a Shtar Muchar, sorry, then it is a Shtar Muchar, well then it should be counting from Nisan. And we said we do it from Tishrei. Therefore it must be, the Gemara says, a proof that it must be that we use the Greek convention, and that would seem to be a proof for Rav Nachman that this doesn't necessarily have to be a Shtar Muchar. So now, if you remember back in the Mishnah on Ches Amud Aleph, we mentioned different holidays which are prohibited to engage in commerce with our Gentile neighbors. So one of them was Yom Genusia Shel Malkeim. So we're not sure, the Gemara doesn't know what exactly is the Yom Genusia. So now we're going to find out. So the Gemara says, My Yom Genusia Shel Malkeim. What is the Yom Genusia of their king? Amr Yehuda. Yehuda says Yom Shemamidim Bo Ovti Kochavim. As Malkam. What is it? It's the day of the coronation. It's the day that they coronate their king. Batanya, we have problems. The Brisa says Yom Genusia V'Yom Shemamidim Bo As Malkam. It sounds like Yom Genusia is something different than the day in which they coronate their king. So Gemara says Lokashia Hadide Hadibre, that one is referring to the actual initial moment at the beginning, say, of that dynasty. And then the next one, it's referring to the day in which the son was coronated. So there's the initial beginning of Yom Genusa, still could be coronation. It's the initial beginning of the dynasty. And then the Yom Shemim Bar Malkam is referring to the son. So Gemara says, wait a second. Umi Mukmi Malka Bar Malka, is it really true that these kingdoms that we're exposed to, that they have succession, they have dynasties and successions? Vatani Rav Yosef, what's he taught? It's about Malchut Edom, about Rome. Hine kata netaticha begoyim, because the pasuk in Ovadia that about Edom, I've made you the smallest amongst nations. What, in what sense have you been the smallest of the nations? Says the Gemara, Shein Moshivin Melech B'Melech, that you don't have succession, you don't have dynasties. And continues the pasuk, Bazuya Tam Meod, you're very, very, very embarrassed, but pathetic. Shein Lahen Lo Ksav Lo Lashon Ella. So they don't have their own language, and they have their own written in dialect, meaning that in the sense that the Gemara is assuming that the language that they took was really just taken from previous cultures. We see this even when it comes to the Roman pantheon. The Roman pantheon is just a Greek pantheon, recasted in a Roman way. Like Saturn, we said it's Kronos, and Zeus is, I'm forgetting who, but the point is that they didn't have their own unique, again, it's a critique saying, oh, you think you're so great, but really, you just stole your culture and your religion from other people. So Gemara says, wait a second, Elama Yom Genusia Yom Halida. So then maybe you could say, so the whole point we said before is that they have successors, and therefore the answer was that one refers to the father, one refers to the son. But we just proved that they don't have dynasties, so how could one refer to the son? They don't have dynastic succession. So Gemara says, no, what is it? It's the birthday, Yom Halida. Natanya, another problem, Yom Genusia of Yom Halida. So it sounds like Yom Genusia is not the birthday because it's a separate thing. So Lo Kashia Hadidei Hadibrei. So it's not his, it's his and his son's. So he said, "Vatanya." We have another problem with that because Yom Gnusa Shalo, Yom Gnusa Shalbeno, Yom Alida Shalo, Yom Shalbeno. It sounds like that Yom Gnusa is not his birthday, nor is it his son's birthday, because the Brisa describes them as separate things. So the Gemara says, "Ah, Elama Yom Gnusa. What's Yom Gnusa? Yom Shemamina Bo Malkam." It's a day in which, according to the king, but you just told me that we asked before this question that we have a brice that says Yom Gnusia and Yom Shaminim Bo Malkam. They sound like they're two separate things. And what was Gemara's answer? Oh no, Hadi Day. It's his and his sons. So Gemara says, "Velo Kasha Hadi Day Hadi Bre." It's not a Kasha. Don't ask me that question of
where.
Well, his father and son, what about dynastic succession? That is true. They don't have imposed upon the people a dynastic succession. But if the people decide to accept them, then in Roman policy, in Roman governance, they'll accept to have one after the other having a dynastic succession. So where do we see an example of that? This is where we get to the connection between Rebbe and Antoninus. Like the example of Kagon, Osuviros bar Antoninus, like Severus, the son of Antony. The Malach, that he was king. So now the Gemara is going to tell us about the problem of that Antoninus, that Antony had, and how he asked some questions, and he got some advice from Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Just one point is that apparently during the time period that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi lived, there were seven emperors, all called Antony. So then different academics try to point out, like, which one are they referring to and which one does it correlate to? Again, it's very difficult, because we'll see later on Yudim Abayis, is to describe how there was this tunnel between the house and the palace of Antoninus and the house of Rebbe, and they would travel back and forth. And so already the Shla, HaKadosh says, wait, so you're saying there was a tunnel going all the way from Israel to Rome? And it doesn't make any sense. So again, what is this actually referring to? Is it actually historically accurate? Is it just like a rabbinic reimagining? Is it maybe like this wasn't the actual emperor? Was it some sort of like protectorate of the area? Again, there's different positions in the academia about who exactly is Antoninus. So Amar Antoninus Rabbi, so Antoninus goes to his friend Rabbi and says, I have a following problem. He says, I want to achieve, I'm about to end my time as in politics. I have two good things I want to do at the end of office. You know, with the issue of a lame duck president. Same thing with Antoninus. I want to make my son Severus the successor. But I also want to do a favor to you, because Tveria was the place of the rabbis, to make it a tax-exempt city. That's what Klanya means. So the emalahu chad avdi shel avdi. But if again, I get this passed through the Senate, you know, just like today, it's passed through the Senate. So if I say one thing, so then they'll accept it. But if I ask for two things, they won't do it. So now we have to figure out later why Rebbe can't say what he's going to say, but he's going to put on a little show so that his friend Antoninus can understand. So what did Rebbe do? I see Gavra Arkevei Achavre. He took two people, put one on top of the shoulders of the other. And then he handed a dove to the person on the other person's shoulders, the top guy. And they said to the guy on the bottom, tell the guy on your shoulders to let the Yonah go. So now, Amr Shmamina, so now Adina says, brilliant. Now I understand the advice the Rebbe was trying to give me. Hachi Kamerli, this is what he's trying to say. So you want to make your son Severus the emperor, so make him emperor. Tell the Senate that he's going to become emperor. Get him passed, get him, you know, through the different committees. And then, and then you'll tell Severus, because again, he's your son, you're not going to stop talking to him, that he should go ahead and implement your policy of making Tveria a tax-free zone. So this way you could kill two birds with one stone by just actually doing one thing, because you're making Severus emperor, and then Severus, under his regime, will do it. So that's the end of this story. Tomorrow we'll talk about some more interaction between Antoninus and Rebbe.